Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and this is a very special crossover pod. I'm delighted to be joined by the host of the Disturbing the Peace podcast, Rachel O'Neill. And the reason, Rachel, is we're both delighted to be here, actually, Rachel.
That's true.
Because we are joined by educator and advocate, host of As Me podcast, As Me with Sinead. Successful iTunes number one, by the way.
And the
latest episode is Hosier, and it's a real good listen.
It's incredible.
Sinead Burke, and Finglas woman, proud Finglas woman. Sinead, welcome to the Ballymun part of Finglas. How are you?
I'm good. What a lovely introduction. I think that's the first time I've been introduced on a podcast as a proud Finglas woman, and I'm very into it.
No, listen, obviously, you know, we've spoken offline about what your work, what you do, how you go out, how your message comes out into the world. The podcast itself, I know it was months of work for you, literally months of putting things together. How have you found the experience?
Really incredible. You know, I wouldn't say ambition, but I never really thought that doing a podcast would be something that would happen to me. You know, I've always loved communication as a tool for, as trite as it sounds, like transforming culture and really trying to change the way we look and view the world. And I've done that, I hope, through, you know, starting to blog and doing a TED talk. But actually, I have been a real big admirer of lots of podcasts, including yours. And about 2 years ago, did a very brief interview for DeRay McKesson's show, Pod Save the People. And I had loved and admired DeRay from afar. And when I got the opportunity to do this brief interview, it was actually around this time 2 years ago. I was going for hot chocolate with two friends, and I was taking the call via phone. And I was in the Fitzwilliam Hotel, just off Stephen's Green, and I couldn't get signal. So I ended up doing it almost in the attic of the Fitzwilliam Hotel on Stephen's Green. It was a very nice conversation about advocacy and how we use communication and different types of media to transform and to, I suppose, put together a new narrative, and thought nothing of it. But little did I know that a person listening and producing that conversation was a woman called Jessica Cordova-Kramer, who is now the CEO and co-founder of Lemonada. And at the beginning of this year, I got this email out of the blue, and she told me that she was setting up a podcast network, and the second show was going to be about how we're all human and conversations that really prove the humanity within us all. And she said, you should be the host. And I genuinely believed that her next email would be asking me for my credit card details. She sounded far too good to be true. And since February of this year, it's really begun to evolve. We started recording the interviews in May. I was in New York. Like the most ridiculous sentence that I could ever say in the world. I was in New York to go to the Met Gala. And that same week, we recorded the first three episodes of As Me with Sinead. And yeah, it evolved from there. But it has been such a gift to reach out to people I have admired for such a long time. And one of them, as you mentioned, is Hosier. And really just having the privilege of sitting with them for an hour of their time and learning from them, not only about who they are, but who we all are. And one of the best parts of the show is, you know, what I'm really interested in as people is what happens when we begin to realize the fact that so much of what we're concerned about and what we worry about and what bothers us is all the same. And, you know, whether that's listening to Victoria Beckham in the first episode talk about the fact that she was really brutally bullied as a child, or talking to Hosier. Hosier's 6'6" and I'm 3'5" tall. So in many ways, we should have very little in common. But actually, we both experience a world based on the bodies in which we live, which is not something we choose. And at random moments in both of our lives, we felt uncomfortable within that body. And I think the whole point of the show is realizing that we're all human and there is more that connects us then divides us. And I look at it as a real gift, as being able to facilitate those conversations, learning about other people, and in turn learning about myself.
That's a really nice concept for, like, it's a really, particularly in the world that we live in at the moment, where, you know, everyone has kind of been like, oh, you know, maybe we're being divided. But like that thing of like, was when you were given this opportunity, was that exactly what you wanted to do in your head? Was it, I want to find, you know, what links us, or were you looking for, what exactly were you looking for, I guess?
Yeah, like, the show name and everything has changed. You know, the show was originally called In My Skin, and then the show was called Everybody, and there was going to be a real focus on the physicality of kind of living in our bodies. And then it kind of evolved, and then we came up with As Me and As Me with Sinead, particularly to try and teach an American audience how to say my name.
A vital service.
Whether that is the success of the downfall of my show, the fact that nobody can find it on iTunes, we'll see.
It's just Alt-G-R, folks, for the father, okay?
good luck. Really good luck. And, you know, over time, actually, what kind of most evolved is the questions. And I started a blog over 10 years ago. I'm not really even sure how it came about, but the first question that I asked everybody in the interviews for that blog was, how do you describe yourself personally and professionally? And for me, just as Sinead the person, it's been really humbling to see the evolvement of that question transcend from my blog now to this podcast, and to see the different answers that have come about. So kind of the four questions that are asked in every interview is, how do you describe yourself personally and professionally? What's the monologue that's in your head? What's it like to live in your body? And what gives you hope? And then there's kind of a couple of other questions that I play around with. Like, what are the moments that have changed you? What kind of transformed the ways in which you view the world? But really, those four questions are the real pillars for the interview. But yeah, I didn't know what to expect with it. I really didn't think anybody would say yes to being interviewed first. And I thought I'd be kind of relying on speaking to my family members, who definitely wouldn't put themselves up in front of the microphone to be on my podcast. So as the months kind of evolved, and realizing that people particularly began to say yes and that they were interested in that. And then, you know, the show launched literally just a month ago, and we had 5 episodes out within that month, and it's a weekly show, so it's a big commitment. But it really has exceeded every expectation, both from the reaction to people who've listened to it. And I think when you're starting a show, as you'll know, you just hope that it's got a different point of view to everything else that's available in the landscape. And in the United States, at least, interview podcasts are the most common entity that exists within that marketplace. So really trying to prove that me as an individual has some sort of skill set that brings different kinds of conversations outside of people. But really, just for me personally, it was so wonderful to be working within a medium where my height was irrelevant, or at least it wasn't the first thing that people came across. You know, I think being a disabled woman has shaped every single question that I've asked, and has shaped every person that I'm interested in, and has made me what I like to think of as kind of empathetic and kind and understanding and patient. But it's not fundamentally about me being a little person. It's about me being a facilitator for important and interesting conversations.
I was fortunate to sit down a couple of evenings ago with Dr. Austin O'Carroll. Yeah, he is amazing. And he actually, you know, and growing up, he was a little person who was visible in my community. And he actually spoke about how, as again, similar to what you've said there, how it shaped him. But he used to go to conferences or meetings this disabled community meetings, and he'd talk to people, and he would then go, but I'm not disabled. And it took him a long time to come to terms with the fact that he actually was.
Absolutely.
But that formed his worldview. Obviously, he does amazing work out in the community in terms of, you know, harm reduction, drug services, GP services. What you're doing now, bringing that experience, is to a much wider audience. And, you know, do you find the reaction now relative to, say, maybe 10 years ago, that we're in a better place to be more receptive?
There's so much change is required and needed, and at times it can feel overwhelming. You know, I was walking through Dublin just earlier this week with 2 friends who are also little people, and the 3 of us together in unison walking down a street, literally just the actions that people do. You know, there was a group of teenage girls walking along the other side, and they all decided to take out their phones and record us. Or a couple of us had just gone to a gig, and, you know, afterwards 2 guys started following us down the road, asking us if we were football fans. One kind of instigating the conversation, getting a few drinks at him. The other recording it all. And in those moments, you kind of think, gosh, like, there's so much left to do.
Yeah.
And how do you permeate the public consciousness for people to understand that how they act and behave really can impact upon others? And I'm really lucky that I have a platform, and even being invited on your show to talk about these things, where you can perhaps challenge people on not only how they view the world, but how their peers, how their friends, and how they can influence other people to do and be better. But it can be overwhelming at times. I think, you know, there's an emotional labor attached to it all, but it's something that I choose to do. And I mean, my life has dramatically changed in 10 years in terms of the rooms that I get to be in, the opportunities that I get to have, the people I get to speak with. And I think there is progressive change. Things are getting better. But of course, I think it's just the human psyche that you remember the negative aspects more than the positive ones. You know, if I could sit here and list all of the positive things that have happened this week, I'd bore you to tears. But it's that negative piece that sticks out. But yeah, it's been an evolution, I think.
And I suppose what I've always admired, and I hope you don't mind me saying, is that there's a, in our, I suppose, we'd call ourselves progressives and liberals in here, wouldn't we? And in that culture, there's this kind of idea of, we sit in our silos and we all agree on what's good and what's bad, or, yeah. You know, what I've found that strikes me most about you is the integrity to be able to go to where people are. I remember you told a story about school children, secondary school children,
yeah.
and they basically jumped you, and
uh-huh.
Yeah, but you had absolute, I know you were upset, and you went through all the emotions, but you still went to where they were and tried to use it as a teachable moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, I constantly ask the question of myself, you know, what's the constructive solution here? What can be done? And I think it really comes from a place of having a very solid family unit and a very solid support system that I kind of know, even putting myself in those places, there's a safety net for me very personally. But it's also the idea that with a background in education, I think I have the skills and the qualifications to perhaps facilitate these conversations with people whose ignorance is maybe not malicious or is, but actually they haven't been exposed to anything different to try and challenge that thinking. And really, I think what fuels me most times is that my parents founded Little People of Ireland in 1997, and over the past 20 years have really built a community for people to see themselves within that community. And knowing people who look like me, who are much younger than me, be they 16, be they 10, I really don't want them to have to facilitate these same conversations or to feel nervous walking down the street in the middle of the day because they live with a disability that they didn't choose. And it's not them who should have to be making decisions about this, but other people in terms of how they behave. So if I can go into a school and speak with a couple of hundred kids to try to get them to realize the fact that we're all different and we each are challenged by things that perhaps we don't even realize, or it's just human, the fact that we don't succeed at everything and we find some things difficult and we have to manage those things differently. And if those children can then in turn go home and talk about things at the dining room table, like, what's the ripple effect that you can have there? But it's also realizing at the same time, you know, that I'm not the only person doing this by any stretch of the imagination, but I am just one person too. So I think so much of my thinking as we approach the end of this year and go into next year is, okay, well, how can this be scaled? How can you reach more people while still sleeping? I don't know.
I was going to ask, like, because it's like how you mentioned there the term emotional labor and how there is a lot of emotional labor in what you do, and what you do is incredible, but it must be absolutely fucking exhausting because you're doing all these things all the time alongside everything that you do with fashion and everything else. Like, at some points, do you just wonder, like, am I taking on too much? Like, surely there's someone else out there who can help me? Or do you just kind of keep going with it because, you know, it's what you're passionate about?
It's not really a sense of, is there somebody else who can help me? I think there's lots of people who are doing really brilliant things. And I fundamentally believe in that kind of notion of the rising tide lifts all boats. But it's definitely a real question for me is, okay, well, how do I manage this? You know, it's not possible perhaps for me to be in every school at once or in 1 year? And is there ways in which I can like manage out my schedule that if I do, I don't know, 3 school visits per month, how many school visits is that a year? You can tell that maths is not my strong suit. And how many students can you reach within that time? Can you do whole school visits instead of class visits? And it's just making sure that you're kind of minding yourself within that. Is there a smarter way to do it? Can you develop something like for YouTube and that just be displayed? But as you will know, conversations and particularly topics around that are difficult really to consume are much more intimate and they're much more helpful when they are in person. So whilst it's great to have a video playing at the front of a classroom, it's not the same as somebody standing in front of the room telling you how your behaviours affect them. So it's really trying to, I think, build it and scale it with integrity. And then I don't know, or if it's talking to parents, if there's different ways, but yeah, sometimes it can be too much. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, and you know, sometimes people can reach out to you with whatever they're worried about or whatever they're concerned about. And I think for me, very initially, you know, I take it as a huge compliment that somebody trusts me despite not knowing me, that they trust you and they want to confide in you whatever it is that is concerning them or how they feel in that moment. And then for me, it's trying to be helpful within that, but also trying to make sure that I protect myself, making sure that person feels heard and seen and directing them to the right resources or supports or whatever it is that they need, but also making sure that you don't become reliant on each other, because I don't think that's helpful in the long term. But I'm also like, what a gift that somebody would think of me in that way, or think of any of us in that way.
It's very true. It's a real, like we talked about globalization now, but globalization in terms of how small the world is now, you know, like, I mean, this is an example where I'm talking to you now, and that wouldn't have happened in another era where we couldn't reach out across social media platforms and that. But it also then.
My career wouldn't exist 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to tell people.
Yeah. It genuinely wouldn't. Like, when I was in school, I wanted to be a teacher and I loved being a teacher.
Mm.
But the idea of me saying what it is that I do now, which I find difficult to put words around anyway, like, I can imagine saying that in school, like, what do you want to be when I grow up? Well, I would like to host a podcast, do some advocacy, do some consulting, be in schools, irritate people for a living. They'd be like, lovely. And how do you expect to get a mortgage with that?
My favourite question.
Excellent question.
Sinead, I just wanted to ask you, I don't know if this is cheeky, but the first question you asked, how would you describe yourself personally and professionally?
Yeah.
How do you describe yourself professionally and personally?
Oh.
Or is that too?
No, I'll give it an attempt for you. Professionally, I like to think of myself as somebody who facilitates learnings and interesting conversations and brings about, or intends to bring about, kind of constructive solutions in the areas of design, disability, education, and kind of media and communication. So doing some consultancy work within the fashion industry to try and transform business models, make HR policies a bit more accessible and more inclusive, making sure that retail is more accessible and inclusive, and going forward with that, working in design spaces and education spaces in that same way. So I kind of look at it as kind of communication, design, and equality as three real pillars that I look towards. But in terms of choosing projects that I get to participate in, even something like this, there's kind of an overarching question I ask myself, which is, what's the point? Or what's the purpose? And then there are four questions. Does this fulfill my goals and dreams? Does this pay the rent? Does this give back? And does this bring other people with me? And every project and everything that I do has to answer yes to more than one of those questions in order for me to say yes. And this one is obviously paying the rent. I mean, the fees for doing this podcast are just top notch. Tony is paying me a fortune.
A packet of mega meanies, you know?
But that really kind of helps me decide the work that I do professionally and how I kind of pay for it. And then personally, if somebody was describing me, how I would like to be described is a loyal friend, a loving daughter, a kind sister who's always there when you need her and who will proofread your notes but probably won't be able to read something in the press. I would like to think I am the person who, on your worst and best days, that you can call me and share that information with me, and I will cheerlead and support you, and I will be there for you if it's not such a good day. That's who I'd like to be considered.
That's genuinely really, really lovely. Like, I love that. Like, one that's not like, that's a genuinely really lovely thing to hear, Sinead, to be honest.
I'm not sure my friends would describe me.
Yeah, but we all have aspirations.
Can I just say yes,
all of those things are, you must though then have to pinch yourself and say, hang on, now I'm on a US chat show, I'm now on Russell Howard, I'm now, I know, but you've 10 years of, you said, doing all of this work, it is advocacy, it is blogging, this fashion advocacy, this equality and advocating for people with disabilities, all of that. You know, then people say, oh, look, you know, well, after 10 years, I'm an overnight success. But it must still be a bit of a, well, actually, Jamie Lee Curtis keeps telling everybody that she's my best pal.
there's been really wild moments. Like, I mean, going to the Met Gala was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Going to fashion shows. I mean, as the teenager who desperately wanted to be included in the fashion industry, and now to have Fashion Week a part of my annual calendar at least twice a year, and a real concrete understanding that I'll probably be in Milan for Fashion Week in the middle of February, and you know what, if I'm bothered I might go to New York, but I'll definitely be in London. I mean, the pure arrogance of being able to say sentences like that, or I don't know, the people you get to meet, and for me, you know, kind of people are so important within that. And yeah, there's really moments like that with Jamie Lee Curtis, who has been genuinely such a friend and so kind to me in so many ways, or just like the bizarre moments where you're getting to interview Jamila Jamil, or mm-hmm. like going to the Met Gala, as I said, was really terrifying and brilliant and wonderful, or having a mannequin made of your physical self for an exhibition in the National Museums of Scotland, you know, it's just, or having a doll made that's a low person and money is going to low people of Ireland. And you know, it's being able to tick off those things that I felt I would have loved to have had as I was a kid. Mm. And there's still more things that I want to do and that exist on that list. There's kind of those pinch me moments. And it's trying to find then time for myself to both revel in it and celebrate it and like feel like I accomplished something, whilst also then being hungry and realizing there's only a limited time and all of these things by which to get something done. And if you're the it gal at the moment, there's somebody else in 2 weeks, you know? So whatever it is you need to accomplish, do it within this time frame. But I think it's important to find moments and go, yeah, that was a good job.
How do you go about finding those moments then? How do you actually put yourself in the moment and be like, this is it? Like, if you're not, oh, like, obviously you bring up the Met Gala, like that must have been the most incredible experience, but how did you actually be present and enjoy it instead of being, you know, is it your mind racing ahead and just being a blur kind of?
I was so tired at the Met Gala because I burned so much nervous energy that I was almost falling asleep at the after party. I did get to have a dance off with Katy Perry though. So I feel like that's a quid pro quo. you know, feeling tired, doing a dance off with a burger, I'm into it. But it's hard. I think, you know, I try to journal some thoughts and feelings, and that really helps kind of root you in a moment or in a previous moment. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to have that presence and making sure that you're not already moving on from something that you dreamed about forever. But I think it's been really important to me to find those moments. And, you know, whether it is with my family who don't always understand fashion, so sometimes you have to explain those moments that you're like, no, this is a big deal. Like, this is a huge deal. And then other ones too. But it's a practice I'm working on.
I suppose what I want to really come at now is you spoke about, you know, how to bring something to scale, and how to bring more people involved and doing things like this, doing reaching out and trying to, as you said, give back. Do you think that through your parents' association, through all of these advocacy groups, there must be a space there now for a wider movement that because I've spoken to other people who've often said, you know, I don't have a disability, the system disables me. You know, it's that, yeah. And I see that very much now when you talk in terms of fashion, and I would have never have thought of that before you came into my consciousness. Are there actual goals to, I suppose, is what I'm, a long-winded way of asking you.
Goals in terms of fashion,
in terms of scaling and actual, you know, even if it was just in terms of, you mentioned schools, if it was education or fashion or just a an equality basis, what would be the ambition?
I play around with a couple of things, everything from designing a gold standard accessibility kind of marking, you know, when you buy a dishwasher and you get to know which level of efficiency it is, if it's like A or if it's like kind of that for accessibility. What does the gold standard accessibility look like? How do you develop and design that standard? How do buildings and companies then get to buy that IP, and how do they get to advertise it? So I play around with that. I play around with building something like a curriculum and a toolkit that you can develop out and give to schools and give teachers to teach. And then I question actually how relevant that would be if the teacher is not disabled, if the teacher is speaking four different voices rather than amplifying them. What are the tools and the resources that you could give to those people? I play around with developing mentoring networks. I mentor some brilliant young people, but how do you do that in a bigger way? How do you make sure that those spaces are accessible? I play around with having a TV show and being able to talk to a broader audience through that medium, because if there's anything that I've learned in 3 weeks having been on Late Night with Seth Meyers, The Late Night Show, Ryan Tubridy, and The Russell Howard Show, all men, by the way. Welcome to Late Night. Having played around with looking at those kind of different formats and seeing the audience response from television, there's still this real understanding that TV and kind of visual content is where a lot of audience listen and watch and feedback on. So could you do something within a television format and then scale it? I love the idea of taking the Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Fleabag route and doing a one-woman stand-up play and doing it in some of the theatres and actually bringing people into a space like a theatre, which is, I think, the last place where you can actually be present as a whole self, because it's the one place where you have to turn your phone off and you as an audience member are almost another character on that stage, depending on how you react with the content. So there's lots of things that I kind of play around with in my head.
Well, that's a pretty comprehensive answer to my... that's super impressive.
Just figuring out which one to do first.
Yeah, like, that is kind of... What is the most powerful tool for you now, like, going forward? Like, you've just laid out, like, all these amazing ideas. Like going forward with the podcast, for example, like, how is the aim to keep that going, like, on a regular basis? Is it to do seasons? Is it to have reaching out past maybe, like, Hozier and Victoria Beckham? Like, what is kind of your... I'm just particularly interested because it's launched so recently that, like, what is the vision for that?
Sure. So my commitment for the podcast is 45 episodes to 50 episodes, which is literally an episode a week for a year.
Wow.
And then that will run through until October 2020. A lot of those episodes have already recorded. I think in the very initial stage, in order to build momentum and audience around the show, we've really focused on many of the most high-profile guests that we have had and are now interested in the show. But actually, one of the real key principles of the show has been making sure that we reflect the diversity that exists in society. And we've been doing that as much as we can, and that will continue to unfold in even in a more explicit way as the show develops. And there's a segment at the end of every episode, which is somebody you should know, and that's a real tool for me to introduce people. Perhaps not everybody knows as Hozier, because I think when you're starting the show, people will listen to them on the episode, but they know who the guest is. So really using the momentum behind so many of those celebrities who perhaps are household names to then provide an audience to those who are not.
And as someone who's started a podcast, when we sat down with Rachel a few months ago and asked, I think the commitment was 10.
Yeah, we're on 24 now.
We're on 24 now, you know. But what you find is when you're opening, and I'm involved in about 300 at this stage, and that's no exaggeration, but like that, when what you find is it may be speaking to someone else who opens up another door for you, and it just continually, that's the medium works very well like that. And I see what, I can really admire what you're doing, and I think it's a really good way to bring it forward, because use your voice to lift up others, and giving us your time is really grateful.
pleasure, this has been such a treat.
Listen, that's it for me. Sinead Burke, I really appreciate what you do, and I think it's a wonderful, and I wish you every success in the future. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, this has been a real gift, and if people are not already listening to your show, they should subscribe and make sure that you're on iTunes number one now too.
You're killing me in those charts, Sinead. I can't keep up.
Thanks so much. Listen folks, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed that. You can head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. This is totally crowdfunded. We do need the price of a cup of coffee to keep the show on the road. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye bye.